I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. With mere days left until primary election day in Pennsylvania and Delaware, candidates are flocking to the area. Democrat Hillary Clinton stopped by a cafe owned by women in Jenkintown, Montgomery County today to talk women's rights, equal pay, and how she plans to use federal programs to benefit small business owners.
We should be doing more to support small businesses, and we've kind of fallen off from doing that. And we're not, and especially minority and women-owned small businesses, which are the fastest growing sector of the small business economy, but don't get the help.
Bernie Sanders had a big rally last night in nearby Oaks, and despite his recent loss in New York, supporters aren't giving up. Christy Casey Young is a stay-at-home mother who's interested in resuming her career.
He is actually speaking about what we need, which is affordable health care, universal health care. He's speaking about cutting back student debt, making community college free, which I need to go back to school and finish my career.
Donald Trump made his way to Harrington, Delaware, where he set his sights on the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Cruz and Kasich support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will absolutely kill the auto industry in this country. I'm against it. I've been fighting it.
As for state elections, Pennsylvania's Democratic race for U.S. Senate isn't dying down. The most recent polls show former state environmental secretary Katie McGinty is gaining on former Admiral and Congressman Joe Sestak. During the candidates' final debate, McGinty ignored Sestak and instead focused her attacks on Republican incumbent Pat Toomey.
I think that the public cares about where people stand on issues, and for me, it's critically important that they know there's a real choice here in terms of someone who can fully and thoroughly fight Pat Toomey. You know, my track record is one that is the most clearly contrasting with his.
And the primaries are April 26th. Embattled Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane has decided not to run for re-election this year, leaving behind an office racked by scandal. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports it'll be incumbent upon one of the five men running to replace Kane in next Tuesday's Republican and Democratic primaries to restore integrity to the office.
Under Kathleen Kane, the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General has been making headlines, and not in a good way. Kane faces criminal charges. She allegedly leaked secret grand jury material to embarrass a political enemy. She's had her law license suspended, and perhaps you've heard of Porngate.
Breaking news in the state's Porngate scandal.
Kane now says porn emails are at the center of a conspiracy to get her out of office.
Since 2014, Kane has selectively released hundreds of emails, traded among lawyers and judges, that contain pornographic, racist, and other offensive messages. While the scandal has tainted many reputations and ended some careers, it's also tarnished the Office of Attorney General. Enter three Democrats and two Republicans who are vying for the job of polishing it up. The race has centered on which candidate has the right experience to boost morale in the office of nearly 800 employees. And voters in both parties will have to choose between career prosecutors and elected officials who bring political clout and policy proposals to the contest. First, let's meet the Democrats, who are in the more competitive race. Leading in the polls is Josh Shapiro, a Montgomery County commissioner and self-styled reformer. At a recent debate in Harrisburg, Shapiro outlined his vision for the job.
The one person that every Pennsylvanian can call on to protect their constitutional rights, to protect their liberties, to go out and make sure that our air is clean and our water is pure, to make sure every child has a thorough and efficient education system, and most importantly, to make sure our communities are safe.
Shapiro has proposed getting tough on natural gas drillers that pollute and suing the state to create a fair funding formula for all school districts. It's a broader view of the mission of the office than the traditional one, defending the state from lawsuits and prosecuting major criminal cases. And while most of the public thinks of the attorney general as the state's top crime fighter, a great deal of the job is bureaucratic. Shapiro says his executive experience running the third largest county in Pennsylvania will help him see his grander social justice vision through. He's also scored some high-profile endorsements, including Governor Wolf, former Governor Ed Rendell, and President Obama. But Shapiro's lack of legal experience has left him wide open to attacks from his Democratic opponents, two district attorneys who say he's not cut out for the job.
Being in charge of putting salt on the roadways and cutting grass at the county parks is not the proper experience to be the chief law enforcement officer of the state.
That's John Morganelli, Pennsylvania's longest-serving district attorney. For 24 years, he's been DA of Northampton County, a small county in the northeastern part of the state. When he's not attacking Shapiro, Morganelli touts his experience in the courtroom, trying 25 first-degree murder cases. But he's run for state attorney general and lost three times before, and his lack of statewide name recognition hasn't helped. Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen Zappala comes from a well-known family in western Pennsylvania and a significant support from Philadelphia-area Democrats, including party chairman Bob Brady and influential labor leader John Dougherty. Zappala has served as DA for 18 years and has not tried cases himself, but has overseen a large office of more than 100 prosecutors. As attorney general, he says he would improve the office's reputation by leading by example and returning to its core mission.
We're going to attack public corruption, people that abuse the public trust. Unfortunately, I've had to indict and convict dozens of people in that regard in my county over my career. We're going to take illegal guns off the streets, and I would submit that no other office in Pennsylvania presently has taken more guns off the street than my office.
The dynamics of the race on the Republican side are similar, but the competition is less stiff. Joe Peters has risen through the law enforcement ranks, starting out as a beat cop in Scranton.
If you were building an attorney general, wouldn't you want to start with someone who's actually been on the ground in uniform and undercover?
Peters has also been a federal mafia prosecutor, a White House drug czar, and has worked for previous Pennsylvania attorneys general, including a stint as Kathleen Kane's communications director. But he's running for the first time against better-known state Senator John Rafferty, who served as a deputy attorney general in the 1980s before going into private practice. Rafferty, from Montgomery County, bills himself as an executive with a broad knowledge of the law.
And one who is able to build the type of partnerships and relationships with the DAs going forward to join forces to fight the heroin epidemic, and has the vision to go after and has had the legislation to go after those that abuse our elderly and our children.
The two winners of Tuesday's primary will try to sell their vision for the attorney general's office with the backdrop of Kane's criminal trial, which begins this summer. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
We're now 4 days out from decision time for voters in Pennsylvania and Delaware. As for the rest of the nation, the decision now seems to be to pay less attention to the presidential primary process. NewsWorks Tonight, Dave Heller spoke with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll, about whether Americans are getting election fatigue.
Frank, we're still 3 months out from the nominating conventions, and there are already signs of burnout.
That's what we see here at Gallup. Every month we ask people, how closely are you following news about the election campaign? And we expected it to rise every month as the excitement builds. And as we know, we still don't have nominees determined. 31% were following it very closely in January, and then it was 34% in February, and then it was 40% in March. So we were building. But then when we measured it in April, it had actually, instead of going up, had fallen back down to 37%. Not a lot, but clearly the momentum was off and fewer Americans telling us that they're following the election closely. So I think there may be, what you say, some signs of burnout there.
Does Gallup expect it to rise because that's what history shows?
Well, our expectations that it would go up were based on the fact that the campaign was still very much in evidence. We're still campaigning hard. These primaries that in previous years didn't matter all of a sudden do matter, like Pennsylvania's and Delaware, as you mentioned a moment ago. So that's why we expected it to go up.
I presume the parties, and particularly the Republican Party, would wish that this process was already locked up.
I think they would. Republicans would like to have it out of the way, according to our data, fairly overwhelmingly. They say it would be much better, like two-thirds of Republicans say it would be better to go ahead and have the nominee selected before the convention. But we also know, and I think this is a critical point, that Republicans think this whole process so far is hurting their party's image. 63%, that's a key number, 63% of Republicans say the campaign process hurting the Republican Party at this point. We had asked that question back when Romney was battling for the nomination in 2012, and only 40% said it was hurting their party. Same thing back in 2000, we had asked 2008, we had asked it about the Democratic fight between Obama and Hillary Clinton, and only 48% of Democrats said it was hurting the party. So this 63% of Republicans who say it's hurting their party is really significant. The Republicans, rank and file Republicans across the country, think it's the whole process is not good for the GOP.
How does that contrast with the Democratic Party?
Well, the Democrats are happy with the process. 24% right now of Democrats say the whole thing is hurting the image of the Democratic Party. So even though Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are battling each other, that doesn't seem to bother the average Democrat, and they say this is business as usual, and it's not hurting the image of our party.
Frank, who do Americans say will emerge come November?
Yeah, very interesting question. This is not who would you vote for, but who do you think will be the nominee? 70% of Americans say that it'll be Hillary Clinton. Back in January, that was 58%. And these data were collected through last Sunday. That was before the New York primary, which Hillary Clinton won by 16 points over Bernie Sanders. So 70% say it will be Hillary Clinton. Democrats at 74% who say it'll be Hillary Clinton. And for Republicans, Americans say it'll be Donald Trump, not by as big a margin. 55% of Americans said it would be Donald Trump who will be the nominee, 20% Cruz, and a lonely 3% John Kasich. And again, these data were collected through Sunday, so that was prior to Donald Trump beating everybody else handily by over 30 points in the New York primary last Tuesday.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
Still ahead, a group holds a special Seder where Holocaust survivors share their experiences.
One of the greatest, you know, mitzvot, the commandments that we are told on Passover is to tell the story.
That's coming up as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Dave Heller. Today we commemorate the 46th Earth Day. Also today, a number of countries signed the landmark Paris Agreement to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions, a major contributor to climate change. Our commentator, Richard Whiteford, attended the signing in New York. Before heading to the UN, he reflected on the commitment and the magnitude of the work that lies ahead.
The COP21 climate summit in Paris is hailed as a monumental success because all 196 countries agreed to sign the climate agreement. Secretary of State John Kerry and President Obama worked very hard for 4 months before the summit to get China on board to sign the agreement. China walked into the conference with an agreement to reduce their carbon emissions by 60% to 65%. It was the fact that both China and America, who committed to cut our emissions by 26% to 28%, walked in with carbon reduction commitments, along with 182 other nations, that all 196 nations signed the agreement. The biggest fallacy in the agreement is there's no legal teeth in it. It is not legally binding. The countries have agreed to hold stock takes every 5 years to see if everyone is living up to their commitments. The only penalty for failing to meet their reductions is a policy of name and shame to publicly humiliate countries that fail. The critical issue is this. Since around 1850, we burn enough fossil fuel to raise the planetary temperature to 2.16 degrees Fahrenheit. And look at the extreme weather events happening all over the world. We now know that we can only afford to burn around 473 billion tons more carbon to cross the dangerous 2.7 degree Fahrenheit line that scientists say we dare not cross. The problem is we have 2,795 billion tons in inventory right now to burn. If we burn that, the temperature will go up almost 11 degrees Fahrenheit, which will be disastrous for life as we know it. Scientists, including Dr. Michael Mann, a noted climatologist, say we only have around 20 years left to drastically cut our CO2 emissions before we pass the point of no return. The Paris Agreement must be taken seriously, and drastic measures must be taken to cut carbon emissions as soon as possible. As a board member of the World Information Transfer, an NGO at the United Nations, I was sent to Paris to the COP21 Climate Summit as their lead delegate. It was that got me invited to the signing ceremony at the United Nations on Earth Day. I'm Richard Whiteford, and I look forward to trying to instill more urgency into the carbon reduction process at the United Nations.
Richard Whiteford is an environmental activist from Chester County. You can read commentaries from others in our region at newsworks.org/speakeasy. Passover begins tonight. The Jewish holiday celebrates the biblical journey from enslavement to freedom. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg takes us to a special Seder dinner designed to help the next generation learn about the Holocaust from those who survived it.
It gives you something to think about, something to drink about. Drink Lithium to life.
With an abridged Haggadah and grape juice substituting for wine, it wasn't a traditional Seder put on by Jewish Family and Children's Services. But 15-year-old Olivia Gustorf was there for the company. She says sharing traditions with other generations adds meaning to the holiday. And hearing firsthand from Holocaust survivors makes her look at current events differently.
When these refugees don't have homes and, like, they're trying to escape their troubles also, I think that it's important that we think back about the Holocaust and World War II in general and, like, what can we do differently? I just think it's important to not forget what happened and not make the mistake of doing too little.
Michael Herskovitz shared about his childhood in a small village of what was then Czechoslovakia. After being forced to wear a yellow star on his clothing and enduring threats at work and school, Nazi troops came to his family's home.
They usually did everything in Jewish holiday because they knew whoever lives in a Jewish home, everybody Saturday home. They, Saturday morning they walked in and they said, knocked the door while it was dark. They said, wake up the family, dress them all you want. We got to keep moving on. So mom grabbed pillowcase, put some stuff in it, and gave us 2 shirts to pair up, and we wind up in a ghetto.
Shortly after arriving in the Uzhgorod ghetto, he and his family were loaded onto freight trains heading to Auschwitz, a concentration camp in Poland. Once there, his family was divided. He went with his father. But as they were changing into the camp's uniform,
I let my father's hand go. That was the last time I seen my father.
He was 15 years old. Mario Garovici also shared his exodus story. He and his family were forced into the Kishinev ghetto in what is now Moldova. Mass murders were carried out in the ghetto, and bombings killed many others. Mario escaped with his father to Bucharest, Romania, during a Soviet-led bombing campaign in 1944. After the war, he left for South America, landing in Argentina, where he lived illegally for 3.5 years. After obtaining his citizenship, he met his wife, Marta. For him, freedom happened in 2 parts, surviving the war itself and then surviving the memory.
I had the pleasure to be bombed by the German, Russian, American, British, and the German again. And my wife discovered many nights I have nightmare. I was speaking German, I was speaking Russian. I was sitting in the bed, open the eyes, talking and talking. I continued the war 10 years after the war ended.
After raising a family through Argentina's own period of dictatorship, the Garovicis followed their children to the U.S. 15 years ago. They are now part of a Holocaust survivors program run by Jewish Family and Children's Services. Serving more than 150 families in Philadelphia, Eli Shostak says the program takes extra care to help survivors stay in their homes and connect them to their community.
So there's that sustainability factor and making sure that they feel comfortable and safe in their environment. And then there's getting out and being a part of something. You know, one of the greatest, you know, mitzvot, the commandments that we are told on Passover is to tell the story.
It's often hard for Mario to retell his life's experiences, even though he knows 7 languages. Not a particularly religious person, he encourages young people to treat others with compassion, read widely, and to enjoy what you have.
You know, many times I'm saying to my wife, Philadelphia is the safest city in the world. She said, why? You don't carry a gun, and you walk on the street, and nobody is attacking you. It's the safest city in the world.
Even if you listen to the news, it doesn't matter.
It's funny to say, it's funny, but for me, Philadelphia is the paradise.
For WHYY News, I'm Kyrie Greenberg.
And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Hawes, with additional production from Brett Rader. The news director is Eugene Son. Our engineer this week was Diana Martinez. John Musoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan for NewsWorks Tonight.